From NPR News in New York, this is the Bryant Park Project.
Overlooking historic Bryant Park in Midtown Manhattan, we are live from the NPR studios. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. News, information, $400,000 bathrooms. Not
wow.
Here, by the way. I'm Allison Stewart.
And I'm Rachel Martin. It's Thursday, April 17th.
And I'll have an explanation for those fancy restrooms. We'll hear about it in the most. You know, it's the segment where we, you know, scour the internet for the most popular news stories out there.
The internet is very important.
But you know what? What if we had no internet? Then we'd have a 6-minute hole in our show every day.
I can't even imagine a reality in which that is true.
What if there wasn't any internet at all? I mean, where would we go to get the news?
Television!
Once again, we apologize, but we cannot bring you the news. It appears that we have no internet here at News 4.
South Park last night,
where apparently everybody lost the interwebs.
They lost the internet. And then they kept saying, like, let's check Drudge Report to find out what happened. We can't! There's no internet! And I felt a little embarrassed as I watched that. I thought, ooh,
remember
what
back in the
happen?
Day when real reporters got up from their computers and called people, knocked on doors?
I have to actually talk to somebody, please.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, coming up on the show, you know, you watch these Senate committee hearings when somebody's getting grilled about steroids or some attorney general is in trouble. But the day-to-day work can tell you a lot about your senators, maybe even the three running for president. We're going to take a look at committee assignments. Is it real work or some of it resume stuff?
Have they even been showing up to that part of their job?
Well, you know, when there's cameras and General Petraeus, sure.
Sure. Also, a story that we've been following, so have many other media outlets in America, the case of the 416 children who were taken from that polygamist compound in West Texas a few weeks back. An unprecedented custody hearing is scheduled for today. We're going to look at the challenges ahead for the court system in Texas and the repercussions, implications for the children involved. Also, we're going to talk about a new book. This interview, I talked with a couple of guys. They are crabbers, fishermen from Alaska, and they often appear in the Discovery Channel series, The Deadliest Catch. It was a very entertaining interview. Let's just say that.
Excellent. I heard that you were making quite a few faces.
I was waiting.
I don't know if the cameras are rolling. I kind of hope they are, so we can. They were. Wynn Rosmill, the radio producer, says they were. Okay, we just have reaction shots.
Cracking me up. I mean, they kept talking over each other, and at one point I was just like, I'm just going to check out here because I'm clearly, you guys are entertaining yourselves.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. We'll also get today's headlines in just a minute, but first.
A Supreme Court ruling about lethal injection is likely to give a green light to dozens of executions that have been on hold since September.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court voted 7-2 that the three-drug method of lethal injection currently used in Kentucky is not cruel and unusual punishment.
All 36 states that have the death penalty use a three-drug method. The first drug sedates. The second one paralyzes. The third one kills. Critics contend that a single lethal shot would be more humane. In particular, they argue that if the first shot doesn't work, the second shot, the paralytic, makes the inmate unable to express any pain he or she might feel.
But seven of the justices disagreed with that. Why? Well, that's not such a simple question, because the Supreme Court is so divided.
How divided are they, Allison?
They are so divided that they can't even agree on why they agree. The seven justices in the majority wrote three separate opinions. Most of the justices agreed that Kentucky had enough safeguards in place to prevent unnecessary pain and suffering. Justices Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas went the farthest, saying no method of execution is unconstitutional unless the state intentionally inflicts torturous pain.
But Justice John Paul Stevens dropped a jurisprudential bombshell. After 33 years on the court, he said for the first time that he now believes the death penalty is unconstitutional. But he voted with the majority, saying he feels obligated to stick with the court precedent.
Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and David Souter dissented. They say Kentucky didn't do enough to prevent the risk of pain and suffering.
So what does it all mean? Well, for one thing, it probably means a lot more lawsuits. That's because this case could open every state's lethal injection protocols to scrutiny.
And Donald Verrilli, who represents the challengers in the Kentucky case, told NPR his case shows that the problem isn't just the drug protocol, but how it's carried out.
If one looks at the records established there, what one finds is that the problem is not so much with the written protocols, which it at least on their face, seem reasonable. But on the fact that the states don't seem to pay any attention to the written protocols when they actually carry out the executions, and they carry out the executions in a haphazard manner. And with a record like that, it seems to me you're going to have a far different case than the case you had in Kentucky.
But Columbia University Law School professor Michael Dorf told NPR that the court's conservative majority is unlikely to issue any ruling against the death penalty.
This court, as currently configured, is not about to strike down a state's method of execution if it looks more or less like Kentucky's.
You can go to NPR.org throughout the day for updates on this story. Now let's get some more of today's headlines from Mark Garrison.